May the Force be with you. Well, we all remember that line coming from Star Wars, but that's just the tip of the iceberg as far as the influence of Hinduism in this part of the world. It's been in movies, not called Hinduism, obviously. Dharma and Greg, TV show, something like 30% of Americans believe in reincarnation, according to a recent poll. Transcendental meditation has become very popular. Years ago, George Harrison had a hit song, My Sweet Lord. We have New Age philosophy that gets a lot of its impact and a lot of its beliefs from Hinduism, yoga, even something like the movie Avatar that was out not all that long ago, huge best-selling movie. And in this movie, the Navis are able to physically connect to animals and plants, and they think that they're just part of the whole, which includes all animate and inanimate that are present on their planet, Pandora. They explain this, and there's a powerful scene in which the tree is connected to the human body, and this body is connected to all the Navis through holding their hands with each other. Even things like the color blue that's used, that's the color to Hindus of the infinite. So Hindu gods are depicted blue as well. So we've got it all over the place today, even though it may not come under the name Hindu, but it's been extremely powerful. A part of this that is influencing a lot of Americans is a book called The Secret, and we're going to come back to that in just a couple of minutes. Well, why? Why are we coming under the sway of an Eastern philosophy like this, Eastern religion? Well, it's an eclectic thing. We in the West don't want to tie into one thing in particular. We'll take a little of this and a little of that. It's relativistic. There's some pop psychology that comes across as that we're basically good. It puts the spiritual over the material. I mean, you can see the popularity would be there because of that. Let's talk for just a couple of minutes as far as the beliefs, basic beliefs of Hindus. And maybe along the way here, we'll talk about some challenges or some problems that this may have, this worldview. So first of all, the big picture is that there is one single reality to life. It's a perfect, undivided unity. So ultimate reality is just one thing. So that's called monism. So all animate and inanimate are the result of a single energy force. And this force is God, or they say Brahman. And God is everything, and everything is God. And that's pantheism. That word pan means all, and theism has God. So God is everything. So pantheistic monism, if you put those two together, there you go. God is everything, and everything is God. And that brings us back to that book, The Secret. And I just wanted to share a few lines from this book. It was a huge bestseller. The author was on Oprah's show. No wonder this is popular. Listen to some of these things. You are the master of your life, and the universe is answering your every command. How about this? The secret means that we are creators of our universe. Well, if you're a creator, doesn't that put you in the position of God? Sure. After all, you are God. Everything is God. How about this? All that exists is the one universal mind, and there is nowhere that the one mind is not. It exists in everything. The one mind is all intelligence, all wisdom, and all perfection, and it is everything and everywhere at the same time. If everything is the one universal mind, and the whole of it exists everywhere, then it is all in you. Ah. So we are one. We're all part of this universal mind. Let me see if there's anything else I was going to share with you from this. How about this? This is also from The Secret. You are God in a physical body. You are spirit in the flesh. You are eternal life expressing itself as you. You are a cosmic being. You are all power. You are all wisdom. You are all intelligence. You are perfection. You are magnificence. You are the creator. And you are creating the creation of you on this planet. Huh. So this is an Americanized, romanticized, prosperity-driven version of Hinduism. So let's keep that in mind. Notice how that would build your self-esteem up, wasn't it? Wouldn't it? No wonder this is such a popular thing. All right, what are a couple of other ideas of Hinduism? Well, they believe strongly in karma, the idea of cause and effect. If you do something bad in this life, you will come back. That's reincarnation. Samsara is part of the belief. There's these cycles, and you'll come back and you'll pay for that whatever you did in that past life. Of course, the Bible contradicts that completely. In Hebrews 9, it says, talking about Jesus, but he's appeared once for all at the end of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself, just as man is destined to die once, and after that to face judgment. So Christ was sacrificed once to take away the sins of many people. So a very, very strong contradiction to what Hinduism puts forth. But that's one of their beliefs, reincarnation. I'll tell you this, if I can pause here for just a minute. I always thought there's some very obvious problems with reincarnation. I don't know if it's just me, but why don't we remember? If this is so important to us, we come back and none of us remember what we did in the past life so we can correct it and be better people. Why aren't things better? If we've been doing this over and over, and if people are basically learning and getting to be wiser, then why is there just as much suffering and punishment and inflicting of pain on other people? And then once you get reincarnated and your karma kicks in, putting you into a worse or better situation, who or what is delivering this karma? How is that established? There's got to be some kind of karma creator somewhere. Where is that? And of course, to me, one of the biggest problems with this idea of reincarnation and paying for what you did in a previous life is if you're, let's say, in a Hindu country and you see somebody in a street corner suffering, you're not going to interfere and try to help that person because you're disturbing their karma. They've got to pay it back, whatever they did in the past. So you have somebody like Mother Teresa who comes along and helps the poor and helps the broken down and helps the crippled and all. But the Hindus would not do this because people are paying for their sins. Okay, so let's go back. What are some other beliefs? The goal is something called moksha, which is liberation. The idea that you think of yourself as an individual, that's an illusion. The oneness is real, and you want to be liberated from this self and go back to the entire whole. You need to lose your identity. And then the idea of Maya, that this world is basically an illusion. It's not fully real. This separateness, this individuality is not the real way the world really is. After all, it's monism. Everything is one. And they also, a big belief was the caste system. You had the Brahmins at the top, you had warriors, you had the merchants, you had the workers, and finally on the bottom, you had the untouchables. So these are some of the beliefs. Here's a way to think about it, maybe, as far as what they believe in. Let's take creation, fall, redemption, and restoration. That's how you establish a worldview. What do you believe, what do you think about these four areas? So let's go through it real quickly here. What do the Hindus say about creation? In other words, what's our ultimate origin and our ultimate reality? God. That's it. God is. God is all there is. God is an undivided unity. The particulars are that Maya illusion we were talking about. Really, you and I don't exist at all as distinct individuals. That's an illusion. So that's ultimate reality, is this oneness. What about the fall? What's the problem? Well, contrary to the Christian problem, we've just simply forgotten that we are gods. We've forgotten that we are part of this oneness. What's our solution or redemption? We remember that we are God and that we're masters of the universe. Remember what the author of, where did I put it? Okay, anyway, the author of The Secret, what she was talking about there. Yeah. So we remember we're God and we're masters of the universe. So what's the restoration? How do we fix all of this? We exercise our divinity. We create our reality using that secret that the book talked about. Okay, so maybe I'll give you a good idea as far as the beliefs of Hinduism. What are their sacred texts? Well, they have the Vedas, Bhagavad Gita. I have that here, and I wanted to just share with you just some of the comments that you encounter in the Bhagavad Gita. They'll give you an idea of what these Hindus believe. So I'm on section 8 here. This is Krishna talking here. My highest nature, the imperishable Brahman, gives every creature its existence and lives in every creature. The supreme sacrifice is made to me as the Lord within you. So do you hear that? The Lord within you. So we've got God within us. Here's another reference a couple pages later. I am easily attained by the person who always remembers me and is attached to nothing else. So don't make any attachments. You just connect to Brahman. Every creature in the universe is subject to rebirth except the one who is united with me. So you can get past all of this reincarnation once you reunite, once you unite with the God force here. Let me share a couple of other points. This is again from Bhagavad Gita. I pervade the entire universe in my unmanifested form. All creatures find their existence in me, but I'm not limited by them. I bring them forth and support them. I'm not confined with them. They move in me as the winds move in every direction in space. Once more, those who worship me and meditate on me constantly without any other thought, I will provide for all their needs. I am the object of all worship, its enjoyer and Lord, but those who fail to realize my true nature must be reborn. Well, that's not good news. Those who worship me with love live in me, and I come to life in them. I come to life. So they're already there. The gods are already there in us. The God is. But we have to awaken them. Let's do one last statement. Whoever understands my power and the mystery of my manifestations comes without doubt to be united with me. To those steadfast in love and devotion, I give spiritual wisdom so they may come to me. Out of compassion, I destroy the darkness of their ignorance. From within them, I light the lamp of wisdom and dispel all darkness from their lives. So wisdom comes from within. We need to wake up. We need to realize we have the God within us. So salvation is liberation for the Hindu. It's nirvana. It's escaping this world. It's meditation. It's getting rid of our ignorance. We have to know that we are identified with Brahman. So that'll give you an idea of some of the basic beliefs. Well, I think something really crucial is that we need some ideas as far as interacting with Hindus. So there are plenty of places to go. I'm just going to give you something fairly short to think about here, but one thing that we can do is to love them. And we need to agree with them and say, yes, we do need a spiritual remedy to our problems. Building fancier hotels and better schools and giving more people money, that's not going to solve our spiritual need. And we agree with them on that. Secondly, maybe we can find out what they believe and why. We can ask questions. Do they want to be liberated? If so, why? What path are they on? What are they doing to gain this? What about their karma? Are they dealing with that? And what we're trying to do eventually is to make them feel the weight of guilt and the conviction of their own conscience and the Holy Spirit. There's a weight there because it's all up to them. And then we can tell, that's the bad news, and then we can talk to them about the good news. We can tell how God changed our life. That's always powerful, to tell a story, personal story. And what does the God of the Bible offer them that's different than Hinduism? First of all, a better future. It's not to go into the mix and lose your identity. There's a future heaven for individuals. A better path. We offer them a better path. Jesus is a better path. Let me quote from a convert from Hinduism. He's an Indian evangelist. He once said, I have never yet failed to get a hearing if I talk to Hindus about forgiveness of sins and peace and rest in your heart. Isn't that powerful? Forgiveness of sins, peace, and rest in your heart. Honest to goodness, as I've studied different religions and all, I don't see how any of them can give the get over that feeling of guilt, because every other religion says, you've made this mess, you figure it out, and you get your act together. Well, we can't get our act together. That's the problem of the human race. Instead of going down the paths of works that just never end, God's provided a much easier path. Jesus said he's the path, John 14:6. Through trust in Jesus, we can tell him, God says everyone can have sins forgiven and be with him in heaven forever. And we need to point out that Jesus is not just a better path, he's the only path. Acts 4:12 talks about this. Why? That sounds awfully exclusive, but he is God, the only God. And to have a right relationship, we have to return to the one we've sinned against. The Bible makes it clear that man can't realize salvation. We can't work up enough things that we can do. We can't meditate long enough. We can't worship created images enough to earn our salvation. We see this in Ephesians 2, 8 and 9. We see that in Titus 3, 5 through 7. So we need to stress this when we're talking about Jesus being a better path. Something else we can tell him. We have a better future, that's heaven. We have a better leader, that's Jesus. We have a better faith that's verifiable. Hinduism, there's no way you can test it to see if its truth claims are real. It's just meditation and intuition, which, of course, is not totally reliable. But the Christian faith can be verified through real evidence. We can talk to them about fulfilled prophecy in the Bible, archaeological verification in the Old Testament, in the New Testament, scientific insights and accuracy. After all, Hinduism says this world has been here forever. It's just continuing on and on, unending. But that's not what science is telling us now. There was a beginning, and that beginning comports very well with the Judeo-Christian readings in Genesis. There's internal consistency in the Bible. We have manuscript evidence. The Vedas lack all of these. So we can offer a better future. We can offer a better path. We can offer a better faith. And then I think this is key. We can offer a better relationship. It's a personal relationship. Unlike Brahman, this impersonal force out there, the God of the Bible can be personally known and experienced. He hears prayer, for example. He answers prayer. He knows us. He loves us. After death, you will still be you. You won't merge, as the Hindus say, into oneness. Frankly, I find that to be pretty scary, the idea that you would merge into oneness. You lose your identity. Well, do you really want that as your future? Lose who you are. You will still be you. And then finally, a better purpose. The universe and each of us are here for a purpose. We're God's workmanship. We have things we need to do. So these are things that you can say if you want to interact with any Hindus or people who have a Hindu-colored outlook on life. Let me suggest at least some places you can go for some further information. There's a website, Karma to Grace. Now that's K-A-R-M-A, and then the number 2, and then the word grace, altogether.org. Probe, P-R-O-B-E, probe.org. IRR.org. Watchman. .org, impactapologetics.com, equip.org has a lot of material that you would find useful too. So we're dealing with an increase in popularity here of Hinduism, whether it's called Hinduism or not. And we need to be ready to show the differences and explain why the Christian view of the world is more accurate and how that leads to a far better life for the individual.